We appreciate the presence of everyone today. We do have quite a few visitors, and for your presence, we're grateful. Want you to come back and see us every time you can. Just as Randy said, we are very grateful for all of the help we had yesterday. It was wonderful. We got a lot done. The camp looks great. And we appreciate all of those who helped us. And we're grateful for the fish fry we had and all the fish and chicken and all the other stuff the cooks brought. And all the fish supplied by Randy and Ridgely, our expert fishermen. We appreciate all of that. I was eating by Seth, and I was hollering at June. I hollered June, and she didn't hear me. I tried it again. She didn't hear me. Seth was seated right there, and he said, "June." She looked up. I said, "She heard your voice." And then he instructed me. He said, "You've got to say it with authority." Well, I just don't have the volume to do that anymore. I'll have to call on Seth to get my wife's attention. I want you to turn to 1 Kings 21. The lesson, a lot of it comes from this chapter. And also 2 Kings 9 and chapter 10. 1 Kings 21, and then turn over to 2 Kings 9, and if you'll just hold those two spots open, you'll have access to the information with which we're going to be thinking this morning. The lesson is entitled, "When I Think of Naboth." When I think of Naboth. And the first time you hear the name, you know, Naboth, given what you know about the Old Testament Scriptures, I think you're probably like I am. You would say to yourself, you know, I feel sorry for him. The way the story develops and all the details that were given, and you just feel sorry for Naboth because of what happened to him during his lifetime and the horrible way that he was treated by somebody in authority, God's king in Israel. And it just makes you sick to think that somebody would treat the fellow man that way, to say nothing about a king in Israel. But it shows you the depths to which the human spirit can reach when it loses sight of God and goes off into idolatry and Baal worship. And just as an ungodly person with an ungodly wife, and that's your environment, and then you have a power that you can abuse anytime you want to. It's a sad thing. Right quickly, let's think about several things in detail we can think of when we think about Naboth. First of all, he had something that somebody else wanted. That is such a fundamental problem on the earth to this day. Why do you think in Exodus chapter 20, one of the Ten Commandments was, "Thou shalt not covet"? Don't covet your neighbor's wife or your servants or his goods. Don't covet anything that is your neighbor's. Why did God know that the human heart needed to be addressed with a specific brute fact and command like that? He knows that sometimes we can degenerate and we look around, and like Solomon warned us about envy, who can stand before envy? Well, and who can stand before covetousness? Exodus 20 and verse 17. There are authorized ways to obtain things according to the Scriptures. If you understand Bible authority, where would you go? What passages would you consult to figure out how in the world does God expect me to obtain or acquire things? Number one, you can acquire by work. It's an honorable thing to do. Number two, you can acquire by gift. God's not opposed to us receiving gifts. And God likes to give gifts to us. Number three, you can acquire things, according to Matthew 25, by loans. By loans. We could have loans. You should have put my money to the bankers. But at my coming, I should have received mine own plus interest. Authorized way. And then there's also this matter of investment. Investing money. And 1 Corinthians 9:24, there is a way to obtain things by winnings. I've never heard that discussed very much, that point. Now, there are things you have no right to win, even if somebody puts it on the block. There are certain motivations and intentions that are wrong. That's why we hit at gambling. Most things, I remember when I was a young professor in a college and studying, working on that, most things that we say about gambling are irrelevant. They're absolutely worthless when you get down to the analysis of the objection. But there are things that are involved in it that are wrong. And you shouldn't be trying to take something from somebody else to which you have no right and have a bad intention, trying to take advantage of somebody. Those kinds of things. But in 1 Corinthians 9:25, you can run a race for a prize. And so I know there is a legitimate way to win something. But I know that Ahab had no right to take what he took from Naboth. He had no right to do that. And he wouldn't have if his wife had not flourished his imagination, enhanced his imagination. But he did. He took it. Well, at any rate, he had something somebody else wanted. You know, I wish everybody wanted what we have. And that's Christianity, the gospel, hope in Christ. Wouldn't it be something if everybody was just looking and wanting and desirous and really was wide-eyed about it? Wouldn't the world be something if everybody wanted what the Lord wanted them to have? Incredible. And you don't have to sin to get it. In fact, you need it because you are in sin. Amazing how that works. Number two, when I think of Naboth, I see somebody who wanted what he had. Not only did he have something that somebody else wanted, he was a man that wanted what he had. Well, that's significant because some people have what they don't want. The Bible in 1 Timothy 6 talks about the principle of contentment, having godliness with contentment, having food and covering. We should be there with content. Do you like what you have? I tell you, brethren, I've got a good life. I really do. I'm glad to be me. I'm glad to have June. I'm glad to be here with you. It's a great life. I think there are people in life that are always looking for something else. There are people I know today in our very ungodly culture that are always looking for another wife. Always looking for another husband. Maybe somebody with more money. Always on the look. On the make. Watching out. What are my possibilities? I could have done better than her. Hear songs. Could have done better. Or you think I could do better. Or she doesn't think I could do better. My goodness. Do you like what you have? Naboth had a farm. A vineyard. And evidently, there are things about it we're not told, but evidently he was quite content and he wanted to keep it in the family and he was not willing to give it up. And number three, when I think about Naboth, here's a man who had the misfortune of living during the time when his government was corrupt. He had ruthless officials in Israel. Unlike America, you know, this is a secular society, basically. It's a secular government. It's not a theocracy. Israel is very different. Judah is very different from America. We don't have a theocracy. And when God does not have a theocracy, there are certain things that just are inevitable. But in Israel, God had a king. In Judah, God had a king. And Ahab and Jezebel were unprincipled people. Unprincipled. You remember that movie, Hud? I guess that might have come out in the 60s. I don't know, you might not have been born in the 60s for all I know. I guess some of you weren't. But at any rate, I was around. But there was a line in that movie. It was made up at Claude, Texas. You know where Claude is? Up near Amarillo? And they've got a beautiful little area of town right there that just looks like the 1880s, you know, or 90s. At any rate, there's a line in the movie because Hud was just a wicked son. And his daddy said to him one day, "You're an unprincipled man, Hud." And the whole movie was about how unprincipled he was. How can you think about Ahab and Jezebel and not think about the wickedness of the heart to which the human spirit is susceptible? I can get like that, and I can sit on a throne. I could be a king. I could be a queen. Well, evidently so. I didn't choose to be born when I was born, did you? He has the misfortune. It's time and chance. Solomon told us a long time ago, time and chance happens to us all. Sometimes, you know, people get money that don't have a lot of skill or competence to get money. Sometimes people win races, but they're not the fastest. Think about all those thoroughbreds that had the misfortune of being born the same year Secretariat was. in other years, my goodness, how fast they are. Well, given when they were born, my goodness, not too good, are they? Time and chance. And so he's got this misfortune of living during the days when Ahab is on the throne, and he doesn't even live through it because of what Ahab does to him. Verse 25, the officials were bad. But number four, when I think about Naboth, you think about somebody that's got character and he's got integrity, and he's got even, I guess you could say, a sense of or sentimentality. He's not wishing to turn the farm loose. He doesn't want to turn it loose because it belonged to my father's. I have inherited this. This is the family estate. It's not right. I can't just turn my back on it. I can't just give it up. Now, there's some things you can walk away from and give up, but evidently his sense of honor was such that he wouldn't feel right about himself. Now, he's talking about a king. A king wants it. He says, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. There are some things that hold true regardless of the person who makes the request. Ahab had first suggested, you know, I'll pay you for it. I'll trade you a better one. And he's thinking, well, I don't want a better one. I don't need a better one. The one I've inherited suits me. And we've got a history. You know, there's something to be said for history and personal attachment, whether it is to geography, you know where your home is, or family attachment and natural affection and citizenship and all of those things. You know, you go to another country, you get to thinking about how good America is. I've had those feelings. And you come home, how grateful you are to get back home. Nothing like it. I'm sure when people leave those countries and come over here for a visit, they go back and they're glad to get home. But some of them want to come back over here and live. I've never had that feeling about any country I've gone to. But I have been impressed with the beauty and the massive size and massive prosperity of this one. And still, people are trying to get over here because they see it as a heaven on earth. Well, at any rate, he had a sense of honor that would not allow him to give up the family estate. Number five, he was far ahead of prominent officials in his day with regard to character. Because when Jezebel suggests to Ahab, "Ahab, look, he won't sell it, he won't trade it, that's okay. Aren't you a king? You let me handle this." And so she does. And she sends a letter to the nobles in his area. It says, "Now proclaim a fast and elevate Naboth. Just really, you know, raise him up in the eyes of the people. And then bring in some liars. And have them accuse him of blaspheming God and the king." And the officials buy into the plan. What kind of character is that? These are his elders and his nobles in his area. You see, sometimes those on the throne and those that are making the governmental decisions are not quite up to the character of those for whom they're making them. They may be drunk on power, as Ahab and Jezebel seem to be, but they're not so concerned about righteousness, which sometimes the citizenry or some of them are. Isn't it strange how that works? It really is. Verses 8 through 10 of that chapter, 1 Kings 21. He's far ahead in character above those, above his elders and his officials, nobles as it were. He's got obscure righteousness. You think your righteousness counts for anything? Well, it's like leaven, Jesus says. It's like salt. It's like light. Well, I've just got a small light. I've just got a little bit of salt, a little bit of leaven. That's all right. Don't discount the amount. Just maintain the quality. If the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden under the foot of men. So don't worry about the amount. Worry about the quality of it. And keep that high. He had character. And he was an obscure man. And in fact, if this had not been the event in his life, you see, that Ahab was responsible for, we probably would never have known the name of Naboth. Such a character. But one of those, because of other circumstances, whose name finds its place in the book. Number 6, he was victim. He was a victim. When I think of Naboth, I think about a victim of lies. Lies are powerful things. You see in the Scriptures, and that's why the Bible warns us against believing them. And don't believe lies about God, lies about the gospel, and lies about the church. Don't be deceived and take in lies. Lies can be powerful and very effective in the amount of reception that is given to them. Well, that man right there, Naboth, blasphemed God. That man right there, he blasphemed the king. I don't understand really how people can tell bald-faced lies with a straight face. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. I had a person lie to me right to my face one time. I found out later. At the time, I didn't know it. How people can do that, I don't understand. You'd think they'd turn red. Or they'd look down. Or they'd, you know, be, you know, doing something. But just to stand there and just look you in the eye maybe and just lie to you. And show no betrayal of it. Amazing, amazing. And how people can be paid to do it. Perjure themselves in court. Or for other reasons, perjure themselves. And now people aren't even all that concerned about perjury. Depends on how bad it is. A lot of people now lie. Including lawyers, I guess. And so you've got to sift through how bad the lie is. And what was the motivation for the lie. How serious is the lie. You've got to go to other considerations instead of just, don't lie. Don't lie. Lies can be powerful. And the lies that, you know, create alternates to the gospel are eternally deadly. So say the Scriptures themselves. And so I see a man here who's helpless. When I think about Naboth, I see a man who's helpless unless God is willing to help him. And God chooses not to do so. How many people have died just like that? God could have stopped it for some reason or reasons. God did not want to stop it and God didn't stop it. And the death took place. Here's a man who's completely helpless because the king wants his farm. What could he do? You also raise questions along that line when you think about David and Bathsheba. Regarding what she could have done or could not have done. But at any rate, Naboth was helpless unless God chose, but God did not choose to save his life. But number 8, when I think of Naboth, I think about somebody whose power was in his innocence and in the record of his death. My goodness. His character was fine. He had integrity, he had concern, he had courage. He would even defy Ahab in a way. And so he died. And we have the record of it. His power is in his innocence and in the record of his death. How are you living? Is there power? There's power in a righteous life. There's power in a good reputation. There's power in a noble death. Maybe somebody will hear of it later. God knows. God knows now. Talk about power and the effectiveness of it. And angels know. The devil may take notice. How you live. How you live is how you die. The latter part of Ezekiel 18, God even says this. He says, now look, if I'm going to deal with an evil man who turns out to be good at the end, he's judged on the basis of his good. He became a good man before he died. But he said, if I have to deal with a man who was good, and then he becomes wicked, and he dies in his wickedness, he says, I'll forget about the goodness. That's all history. That's all gone. That's all the past. As you live, right? As you die as you live. There's power in the way you live and its influence. There's power in the way you die. And I want to be like Naboth in that regard, with regard to power. Ezekiel 18:24 is that passage. But then, when I think of Naboth, I think about somebody whose blood was finally avenged. On earth, by God, we're not talking about eternity now, just on the earth. Before this book ends, Ahab dies in a battle. And God makes a promise, verse 21 of this book, I'm going to cut off the family of Ahab. But the last verse in the chapter, and this also shows you how that a change of heart in a government official can impact history. When Elijah faced Ahab with God's conclusion, I'm going to get rid of your family, Ahab, because of what you've done. For a little while, he straightens up his affairs. He goes softly. You know what it means to go softly? When you were a little kid and you got a whipping from your daddy, I'm telling you what, for the next day or two, you spent extra effort trying not to get into trouble, because you didn't want another whipping. If you got hard whippings like we got, you didn't want another. Now, after a while, the effect of that may wear off, and you don't go softly anymore. When Ahab is faced with what God is going to do to his family, he goes softly. And God says to Elijah, you see how he changed? He says, because he did that, what I've talked about is going to be delayed. I'm not going to do it immediately. I'll do it in a little while. That affected what would become later history, because a government official changed his thinking about the way he ought to act. What would happen in Washington and throughout the country if all of a sudden the Congress and the Senate and the President decided to really straighten up, in the eyes of God? What would be the outcome of that? God finally avenged his blood. Chapter 9 of the next letter, or next book of Kings, of course, Ahab dies. And not only that, his sons die in that chapter 10, 2 Kings 10. God finally wiped Ahab's sons off the face of the earth. This is back during the time when God visits the sins of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation. Came a time later, Ezekiel tells us, God stopped doing that. That's God's business. How He's going to enact the punishment in all of its fallout to affect history. That's God's business. So during the time when He's still visiting the sins of the fathers upon the children, there comes a time when 70 sons of Ahab are decapitated. The next king, Ahab's son, Ahaziah, dies. And it just so happens he's buried in Naboth's vineyard. But 70 other sons, 2 Kings 10, lose their heads. And the heads are brought and placed before the wall of Jezreel. And Jezebel, of course, is thrown down from the wall at Jezreel. Let me say it like this. Ahab lost 70 sons. But I want you right quickly to look at 2 Kings 9:26. And you'll see a little note right there that you don't find over here in 1 Kings 21. God says that what He's done to Ahab and Jezebel and Ahab's family has to do with what Ahab did to Naboth and to his sons. That doesn't come up in 1 Kings 21. Makes me wonder if when Ahab sent somebody to claim the farm, that the boys resisted. Makes you wonder. He killed not only Naboth, he killed Naboth's sons. So later, Ahaziah, the next son of Ahab, next king, dies, and 70 other sons lose their lives as well. But he was a man, when I think of Naboth, the final point, he was a man who had to wait for justice to be done, even on the earth. A lot of people don't get justice in this life. The good book says, though, that God is infinite in justice. He's going to be fair about every circumstance and event. And all situations are going to be rectified. God knows how to balance everything. He knows how to detract from punishment in hell in order to cover some lack of privilege on the earth. This man who loses his life, his sons lose their lives. God knows how to take care of every provision that has to do with justice and fairness while still blessing or punishing in eternity. That's all a matter of God's power. You do err not knowing the Scriptures nor the power of God. But as far as being over there already, Naboth has to wait for a while. It reminds us of Revelation chapter 6. When John sees before the throne of God or under the altar members of the church who had lost their lives for the cause. And they say, "How long, O Master, holy and true? Dost thou not avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? How long do we have to wait for justice on the earth?" Naboth had to wait. A lot of people have to wait. But whether justice is carried on here or not is beside the point in a way, because it will be carried on over there. And everything that somebody got away with, he stops getting away with it over there. There are several things to think about when you think about the life of Naboth. And yeah, I feel sorry for his situation. Feel sorry for him because of the way it all came about. But I can still think about him and I can still learn because he lived and because he died the way that he died, because God wanted me to have the record of it. I know that God does well. Remember when Samuel told Eli what God told Samuel that God was going to do about Eli's household? And Samuel told Eli that, and Samuel said, "Well, it is the Lord. Let him do what seemeth him good." With all of Eli's faults with regard to his children, at least he had the good sense to resign himself to the punishment. What God does is always the right thing. May God help us to learn that lesson as we think about Naboth. If you're here this morning and not a Christian, come in faith, repent of your sins, make the good confession, be baptized into Christ. If you've done that and gone astray, it's a good time to come home. Won't you do it? While together we stand, while we sing, won't you come?